Cincinnati Edition on a Friday afternoon. I'm Mark Purzel. Cincinnatian Jeff Ault has a new book out titled Four Boots, One Journey, a story of survival, awareness, and rejuvenation on the John Muir Trail. It shares the story of the 218-mile hike he and his wife Beth made in tribute to her brother Mike, who had died by suicide, and to raise awareness of depression and suicide. Jeff Ault, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Oh, great to be here today, Mark.
I want to say I felt it would be only fair that I should have invited your wife, Beth, too, to be here to share the story.
Well, you know, we can always reschedule and bring her on the show, sure.
Well, I know. I mean, you told the story well, and I am glad in the book that at the end, Beth does get to share her two cents.
From Beth's side of the tent, yes.
Yeah, it was very good. So Four Boots, One Journey shares the story of the hike back in 2003, and this was originally published in paperback as a hike for Mike. Why did you decide to republish? Yeah.
Well, Four Boots, One Journey really vetted out the true story. It was really about my wife and I working through a tough situation. The backdrop was it was Beth's brother, Mike, but really the story was about us and working through something and bonding nomadically as a couple. And here's a woman who had never backpacked until she married me. And after one night in the woods on her honeymoon, she completely bagged it.
Yes.
So, but that was the only thing I knew what to do when tragedy hit her family. And it was neat after 5 years of marriage what we discovered about each other from taking this journey.
I love reading about how that honeymoon hike went. That was
right.
I've kind of been there, done that, and I was just before we went on, I was saying, you know, my wife was willing to go hiking, but when it came to those overnight trips, too few comforts, I guess, along the way. So,
right.
But part of that was my own fault too, and that's what these hikes do. When you're going out, it really helps you discover stuff about yourself and your relationship with the world and others, and that's greatly displayed in Four Boots, One Journey.
As
it happens. So, most hikers know it's sometimes difficult to get non-hikers on the trail, but Beth actually said, "I want to go on the John Muir Trail."
Well, yeah, and I knew she was a woman who loves beaches, warm beds, hot showers, so I showed her pictures of stunning, beautiful lakes, left out the word glacial.
Yes.
I told her there's a resort halfway, left out the fact that resort status in the woods is simply food and beer. So no massage, no chocolate on your pillow, it was a rustic 1950s dilapidated lodge, but they had warm food, cold drinks. So, you know, she adapted, but that convinced her. And then I said, we'll bring towelettes, okay?
You
know? So she was looking for something, and athletically she was ready to do this. Physically, it wasn't an issue. It was really just the comfort, leaving her comfort zone. So,
well, you said she's very athletic.
Yeah.
She had a runner, et cetera. So,
but
the comfort zone, that is there. And it's funny you mentioned those moist towelettes. That's where my wife and I got into the first argument in our marriage, is when we went backpacking. And it was all about the cleanliness, where, you know, when you're backpacking in the woods for a few days, going without a shower, you know, sometimes you don't get to wash your hands.
You right. And, you know, that little hand sanitizer has done wonders for hikers. So that there are some creature comforts you can bring.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, in my defense, this was a while back,
okay.
Jeff. So hand sanitizer.
Pre-hand sanitizer.
Maybe even pre-moist towel. No, not really that far back.
Right.
But talk about the John Muir Trail, because you went hiking on the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah.
And A Walk for Sunshine, your first book, award-winning book. Compare the John Muir Trail to the Appalachian Trail, because I know a lot of people here in Ohio are probably more familiar with the AT.
Right. Well, the Appalachian Trail is on the East Coast, and it's known as the green tunnel in the trail community, because most of the time you're below the tree line, except when you come out to a view occasionally. The John Muir Trail is out in California, and you're walking across the Sierra Mountains. It is probably the most rugged section of the Pacific Crest Trail that goes from Mexico to Canada. Matter of fact, a lot of the Pacific Crest Trail hikers will skip the John Muir Trail because of adverse weather and ruggedness. I mean, the rivers are dangerous sometimes to ford, but you are above the trees almost the entire journey. So it's not a green tunnel at all. You are on top of these beautiful mountains, and you can see on a clear day for endless miles, and you can see lakes that look like little dots just riddled across the landscape. You're 2 days removed from civilization. It starts in Yosemite National Park, the northern terminus, and then we hiked south from there to Mount Whitney, the highest mountain in the contiguous U.S., and it goes through three national parks. And it was named after John Muir, who is considered the grandfather of the national park system, for his influence.
I'm speaking with Jeff Ault, the author of Four Boots, One Journey, a story of survival, awareness, and rejuvenation on the John Muir Trail, a hike with his wife. Have you been hiking on a trip with your spouse? How'd that work out? Let us know by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Now, talk about the Sunshine Walk, and I mentioned A Walk with Sunshine, your award-winning book that was about your Appalachian Trail, and this really kind of launched your a career as Hiker Jeff.
That's true. Yeah, well, after graduate school here at Miami of Ohio, I embarked on a journey from Georgia to Maine, completing the entire Appalachian Trail. And I did it for Sunshine, a home that serves over 1,000 people with developmental disabilities in Ohio. My brother, who has cerebral palsy, has served there, and it inspired an annual event, My Sojourn in the Woods, which is very cool. Now we have a 5K walk, run, and roll in inspired from my lonely journey in the woods. And so it's amazing what your positive ambitions can result in. So,
well, I think you mentioned in the book it was the 17th annual Sunshine Walk.
That's right. That's right. This coming September 6th, the 17th annual Sunshine Walk, Run, and Roll. Yeah.
Wow, that's good. Well, so this hike was about raising awareness, and it's not only through the book that the awareness has been raised, but it was also on the hike when you met hikers in the woods there on the John Muir Trail.
Oh, no doubt. So here we were rejuvenating together, but we did this as a depression awareness campaign because that's what we know led to my brother-in-law's ultimate death. And we thought, well, this is a positive way, a physical way that my wife and her family could coalesce around and work through this, something tangible. And being aware of the signs and symptoms of depression, and just making people aware of that. So we wore Hike for Mike shirts, and Mike had worked at the Chicago Board of Trade, and all the floor traders wore the same shirt and had Jean Day. And so we had a website, and people would log on and follow our progress. But then there was also a page for tips on depression awareness. And almost an equal number of hits to our website also went to that page. And that was our goal, just to create awareness. And we succeeded.
Well, I have to give a shout out, as you do in the book, to Georgia, your webmaster, who really was the person who was your contact with the rest of the world while you were on the hike.
Georgia Sawhook, right here in Cincinnati, Ohio, became our webmaster, but she didn't realize it yet. She was also our point of command and control. Everybody was calling her for updates, and she did a beautiful job. She really did.
Well, and it's you can see as many times as you checked in along the way. I mean, you really do give her good credit in the book as it happens. Talk about bears, because you talk about bear canisters and encounters with bears, and that was something. Mountain lions, too,
yes.
And that was, you shared some stuff with Beth, Jeff, yes. But not everything,
I didn't want to scare Beth away, and, but the bears are a bit more aggressive on the West Coast than the East. Granted, they're not the grizzlies in the Sierras, but they look almost like grizzlies. I mean, they're cinnamon-colored, so if you have to take a second look, but they're really black bears. But rangers had photographs of what they can do. They'll peel the roof off a car to get to the cooler. And if you bring food into a tent, they'll smell it and they'll come after it. And so they make you, it's a rule, you have to put all your food and anything scented in these plastic canisters with a little, like a nickel size screw top that with a divot to unscrew. And these bears are so intelligent, I joke that they're eventually going to file their nails down and open that thing up. And we were glad that we did pack our food in that because we couldn't hang our food on anything like you can on the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah, no trees.
No
you were
trees.
Saying above the tree line. Yeah.
Right. So we would use them as little benches at night. So we'd sit on them while we ate. And then you would just set them outside of your tent a good 20, 30 yards away downwind from your tent. And so it worked out well.
And your first bear encounter wasn't that long after you started. Well, actually, before you started,
yeah,
right?
The night before, we're in Curie Village, last night of civilized amenities, and we're in these tent cabins, Civil War-looking like tent cabins. And all of a sudden, you hear people shrieking and screaming, and then you hear metallic bangs. That's what they recommend doing to scare the bears away, is banging things together and throwing rocks towards the bear and backing away. But some people had snuck food into their little tent cabin. The next day, when we start the journey, we're just a half day up this mountain, and we round a bend, and there's this large bear just lurking. And Beth's looking to me for advice, and I said, just keep walking. And you know, and she's snapping pictures, following my advice, and I'm just saying prayers, everything's going to work out fine. And then this little boy rounds the bend, and he sees the bear and turns and runs. And you never turn and run from a bear.
Right.
It instinctively starts to chase the boy. The boy clambers up onto this bus-sized rock, and the bear's clacking its claws on the rock. And I'm like, oh, no. So I'm throwing rocks at the bear to detract it. It finally turns, looks at me, and then kind of jogs off in the woods. And you know, the boy's yelling for his dad. And it really was a moment for us. We realized, gosh, you know, it was a Mike moment, where Mike now has a son without mm-hmm. that father he can yell for, you know. And it was right. just a powerful moment. We had some of those powerful moments the whole journey. So,
Jeff Ault, author of 4 Boots, 1 Journey. You can ask a question or share your stories at 513-419-7100. Kevin in Fort Thomas, you're on Cincinnati Edition. Good afternoon. Hello, Kevin.
Hello.
Hi, Kevin. You want to talk? You have a story to share with us?
I do have a story. I've been a pretty hardcore backpacker my whole adult life. And I've tried to get my family interested, and they are somewhat interested. They like the wilderness. But we went to the Uintas Mountains in Utah 2 years ago, and we met up with a friend of mine who lives in Utah now. And so two families going up, absolutely beautiful mountains. And the first night we go in, we camp out in this meadow, and we're going to go to the top, to the tops of the mountains the next day. You couldn't ask for a more beautiful place on earth. We get up the next day to start hiking up the mountain, and beautiful weather. Suddenly, all of a sudden, gray clouds come in around lunchtime, and we're sitting there eating. And then all of a sudden, it starts pouring down, and then it turns to hail. And it just hails like nobody's business on us. And we run to get under the trees, and it just wouldn't stop. And it was raining, and it was hailing, and it started piling up. So it was like snow. There was so much hail. At that point, we decided, okay, it's time to turn around and go back home. So we were trudging down the mountain. We had bought some decent ponchos, and those couldn't take it. They everything soaked through those. Everybody's feet were totally wet. You would step in puddles that looked like they were just a pile of snow, but it was ice water instead. And we finally made it back, and we're all frozen. And my wife is like, you know, I've had enough of this. We let's go back to the car. And she knows that I never would have left if it wasn't for her. We would have just stuck it out. But she convinced me, like, okay. And so the kids packed everything up. The kids really were troopers about the whole thing. They were really good. And actually, my wife was really good about the whole thing. But we packed up everything. And the last thing we did was we made some coffee and heated up some hot water. We poured it into our boots just to warm our feet up. And then we hiked down the mountain with everything totally soaked with water. It was just a horrible journey. And we made it back, and of course the sun comes out at that point.
Oh, of course, as soon as you get back to the car. Yeah.
But then later on we went down to southern Utah, where everything is all dry and desert, and absolutely beautiful place. But we managed to find the only place where it rained, and up in the Manti Mountains, which are above the Arches National Park. And we were down in Arches and hiking through that, and it's like, you know, 110 degrees and no humidity or anything. It's like an oven. We managed to make it up to the top of the mountains to camp up in the mountains. And more rain. We get wet again. It soaks the sleeping bag. At that point, my wife had it, and that was the end of it. I don't think we'll ever do this again.
Well, thanks for sharing, Kevin. It sounds like you were unfortunate meteorologically there more than anything, especially
we
in Utah.
It's rain in the desert, so that was good.
Okay. Well, thanks for your story, Kevin. Greatly appreciated. Yeah, well, and the weather on your trip, Jeff, you actually had a rough start, but then the most of the latter half of the journey, you didn't have to deal with that hail and rain that Kevin was talking about.
Yeah, we ran into some thunderstorms the first few days. We skipped going up Half Dome, which you're fully exposed and have to hold on to cables and
so metal cables, shall we add.
But further on, a few days later, then we get up onto this mountain pass, and we're fully exposed, and this storm comes up over the mountain. And I had just read about some climbers in Wyoming who were struck by lightning, and I mean, you could hear, you could feel the lightning. It was that close. It was all just happening so quickly that we dropped our poles and just ran down the mountain till we got beneath the tree canopy, took out a tarp, and sat on the tarp so we had something to ground us should lightning strike. And it was pretty frightful. We were literally in the heart of a really nasty storm. So.
Well, and you're the tallest thing out there when you're exposed above the tree line,
yes,
too. And then, again, metal hiking poles, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
Lots of opportunities.
Which is why we
there.
Dropped those, yeah. So,
and I don't know if anybody, you know, for the folks who hike around here or hike in the Appalachian Mountains, you know, don't realize how exposed you are. I had done some backpacking out in Colorado, up in Rocky Mountain State Park, where, you know, when a thunderstorm came along and the lightning was striking on the ridge just on the other side of the creek from where I was, and that was the most frightening situation I'd ever been in because there was nowhere to hide.
Right, yeah, you're at just hoping it doesn't hit you next. So you want to get down below tree line if you can, and if not, try not to be the highest object up there, at least. So.
Well, you know, you mentioned about that quote-unquote resort that was halfway through your journey on the John Muir Trail. And yes, if you've been in the woods, you know how good anything tastes.
That's,
you know, a cold drink, anything.
Yes.
You know.
So, yeah, and that was our only resupply. And so we had a box waiting for us there to reprovision for the rest of the journey. We took a few days off, but it was an old rundown hotel that may have been nice way back in its day, but now the mattress had like a pit in the center, and you're better off sleeping in your tent outside, basically. But they had great food, really nice people, and it was on this beautiful lake. It was a Lake Edison. And you could ride this boat across the lake to the resort and or walk around the lake. But just so that was where I picked up my fishing license at that point, and from there south started to fish as we hiked.
I saw the picture in the book of your first catch. I had trouble seeing the fish. Where was it?
Yeah, no. They were really small.
He's holding up a fish? Where's that fish?
Something I miscalculated. My wife is half my size. So when I prepared all the food, I was pretty good at this for my Appalachian journey. Well, I thought she wouldn't eat near as much as me. Well, she was spoon for spoon with me. We were running low on food. So the fish helped our food supply. We were relying on them to offset the increased consumption. So,
yeah, you were begging for food a couple of times along the trail too.
Yeah. So we had to buy. We were lucky to run across a hiker that was willing to sell a few entrees because they were heading out. And so it worked out. But when we ended the journey, we had literally like an energy bar, a candy bar, and a can of tuna. You know, we were down to just basic stuff. So, yeah.
Well, and talk about your relationship with Beth on the trail, because you do expose it and share it in the book and talk about how it kind of morphed and changed as it went along.
It did. You know, it's funny. She grew as a nomadic survivor. I mean, she realized she felt so gross. She just jumped in a glacial lake.
And she hates cold.
And she hates cold. So not to be outdone, I jump in the lake and regretting every moment of it. I mean, you could chill any beverage in this lake instantly. And she got so hungry, she deboned a trout with her teeth. She didn't want to wait for me to use my little fillet knife. And then she was just discovering her own self. And then we learned something, that she could handle thin air better than I, where I was getting altitude sickness above 7,000 feet, and she's pulling me up the mountain. So it was, you know, amazing how you discover. So she realized, wow, you know, and it's genetic, really, because we're both in pretty good shape. But and our relationship grew. We became a team. You know, I would get the coffee on in the morning. She would break the sleeping bags down. And it was really kind of neat. And we had no schedules. You know, we could just focus on each other. And you're removed from everything. You're walking all day. You start to have conversations you've never had before, you know, and the one commodity that she discovered was more important to her than food was toilet tissue. And she was running low. She was more concerned about that than our waning food supplies. That so much so that she found some hikers up on this mountain pass, and she scores a deal. She offers them, we're carrying a satellite phone because we're using that to talk to our webmaster to update our journal. She sells a phone call to this woman up on this ridge in exchange for a roll of toilet tissue. So I wrote about it. I think it was the deal on Pincho Pass.
Yeah. Well, obviously, a lot of good came out of this. And I would say from the journey and knowing you'd only been married 4 years, that just some amazing development in the relationship.
Yes.
And it seems to have grown, and you've taken it beyond there. This is kind of a step back because I became familiar with your work with your Get Your Kids Hiking book.
Yes.
And so I guess you could say I came late to the game. So this is pre that and pre-kids. So it seems like it was very positive. I mean, what did you take away from the journey?
Well, we literally, metaphorically, we learned to walk through life together, you know, We learned that you can work through anything if you stick together, and we were doing something positive. You know, the physical act of walking it is so good for you from just a physical perspective, but then a mental perspective. You get the same chemicals in your brain flowing that you do when you do any exercise. So you start having these creative thoughts and positive thoughts. And So it was just amazing that way. So your conversations are more positive. You're more creative in working through problems. And you're also having to work through problems of just simply finding water, and you're, so all around it built it. We grew together. We know that we could walk into the woods and survive together. It solidified our marriage to where we're at now, and we have two beautiful children, and we've introduced them to the woods at a very young age. So
Four Boots, One Journey, a story of survival awareness and rejuvenation on the John Muir Trail, meant to raise awareness about depression and the effects. Of course, that's big in the news with Robin Williams' death here just recently. But Hike for Mike became, in the book, you talk about the hike to the hill. Tell about the hike to the hill.
Yeah, it was on the launch day of the book, this group out of Washington, D.C. contacted us and asked if we'd lead this hike to Capitol Hill to create awareness of suicide prevention, depression, mental health, and all that. And they had just passed legislation for mental health awareness. And so the senator that wrote the legislation was marched with us, and we had one of the Miss USA runner-ups, Miss Connecticut. She sang America the Beautiful, and it was really neat and daunting. But Best Parents came with us, and it was a large crowd that turned out. But standing on the Capitol steps, it made you realize, wow, passing a bill, it can be as daunting as walking the John Muir Trail, even more so. But it just brought it all together, and it was just a neat way to just, you know, looking down that mall and Lincoln sitting at the very end, and the flag, you know, whipping in the wind, and I don't know, just it was really something, and to be able to help with that. So
where do you hike from here? We only get about 30 seconds. Where do you hike from here, Jeff?
Well, you know, we hike all over the area, so there's lots of great hiking in Ohio. And we head down to the Smokies quite a bit, and out to the Shenandoah National Park and Red River Gorge, Kentucky. I mean, we are in a hotbed of great hiking opportunities. So Hocking Hills and John Bryan, and, you know, there's all kinds of opportunities. So
nearly as beautiful as the John Muir Trail, too.
Right, yeah.
Well, thanks for being here today, Jeff. Greatly appreciate the stories.
Well, thanks for having me.
Jeff Ault, he's a Cincinnati author. His book, Four Boots, One Journey, a story of survival, awareness, and rejuvenation on the John Muir Trail, is available where books are sold, as is his book, Get Your Kids Hiking, How to Start Them Young and Keep It Fun. More information and links at wvxu.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can find archives and links for Cincinnati Edition stories at wvxu.org. Technical director for today's show was Kevin Rowinski. Producer was Bill Dean, with help from Jim Nolan. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Purcell. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for Science Friday next on 91.7 WVXU.